I'm Lois Carr. I'm 39. Today is September 8th, 2005. We are in front of the St. Louis History Museum, and I am the daughter.
My name is Janine Shoemaker. I am 73 years old as of last Sunday, the 4th of September. Today's date is the 8th of September, and I am inside of an Airstream parked in front of the History Museum at St. Louis, Missouri, and I am the mother of the interviewer.
So, Mom, tell me what your earliest memory is.
Well, I was thinking about that, and I don't have any really early, before five. I don't remember kindergarten. I remember the name of the kindergarten teacher, Miss Hall. But I remember a birthday party when I was 9 years old, my very first birthday party with friends. And they came for lunch, and Mom had fixed a grab bag in the center of the table with ribbons streaming out, and you pulled your ribbon and you got what was on the end of it. So that's really my earliest memory, is when I was 79. That was a happy memory.
Cool. How would you describe yourself as a child? Were you happy?
I don't know whether I was happy. I did a lot of escaping in books. Mom and Dad fought a lot, and that was scary. And so I escaped in books. But I did have friends on both sides of me. Nancy lived on one side and Joyce lived on the other. And as you know, those two friends are no longer with us.
So now, what was it like with all those people living in the house? I've seen Grandma's house. I know it's really small.
It's very small.
Okay, so how many people were there?
Well, at the time that I was growing up, when we moved in the house in 1935, March of 1935, I was 5 years old, almost. And, let's see. Anyway, it was 1935, and I guess I was 2 and a half, excuse me. And Shirley was just a baby because she was born in January 1935. So for 5 years, it was just the four of us. The only problem is that architect, you had to go through Mom and Dad's bedroom to get to the only bathroom in the house. And then when Shirley was 5 years old, Allen was born. And I was 8 when he was born. And then the next baby, I was 13, and she was in the crib. And then I was 15 for the next one. But they were still like babies,
Right,
they were in the crib and things like that. And then I was 17 when Linda was born. But I left home at 19, so I was not living at home when Barry was born. And he was born 3 days after my 20th birthday. He was born the 7th of September.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yes. So it didn't seem, really crowded, except we just had the one closet. And so the girls all hung our clothes in, and we had a dresser with about 5 or 6 drawers. Each person got one drawer. And that's where you kept your underwear and your sweaters and everything. You got one drawer.
Did you have a favorite sibling then?
I did not feel like a sibling to Shirley. I felt like she was like my living doll to play with. And Mother tells me, I don't remember this, but she tells me that Shirley didn't get in trouble because I remembered the things that I got in trouble for and protected her. I would say no to her before she could get in trouble. I did feel like a sister to my brother, Allen. Yes, I really did. For all the rest, I was sort of like surrogate mother. You think
right.
About that, 13, 15, 17. And I did a lot of babysitting and taking care of that kind of thing.
Do you have a favorite sibling now, would you say? Are you closest to one of your sisters?
Or? It's an absolute blessing that I've developed a relationship with all my sisters. You think about it, Linda was 2 years old when I left home. Those little girls were 2, 4, and 6. And now that we're married women, we're grandmothers, we're mothers, we're grandmothers, I really connect with my little sister, Linda, my sister, Shirley, who I would fight with. We don't hang up the phone without saying, I love you. So my sister, Norma, I like for one reason. My sister, Julie, is getting much more conservative as she gets older. So there are certain subjects that I do not bring up.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I have friends like that.
Yeah.
We don't talk about that stuff. Did you get into trouble when you were growing up? What was the worst thing you ever did?
I don't know what the worst thing. I do remember my father had a razor strap, and I do remember I must have been bad enough that I got spanked by with the razor strap. But my sister Shirley would start to cry before she ever, before he said over my knee, and so she didn't get much of a spanking. I was one of those stubborn, he's not going to see me cry. He can't make me cry. And then, of course, I got a worse spanking. So I must have done something to deserve that.
You don't remember what you did, huh? No. You just remember the getting spanked. Now, you mentioned your best friends.
Mm-hmm.
So and what were they like? Were they, were they the same? Were they different? Did you like one for one reason?
Yes. Nancy was so even going, and as we grew up together, you remember, my memory, I was 2 and a half. Nancy is exactly 2 years older, and 1 week in September, and Joyce was 1.5 years older. And when we'd play dress-ups, and of course that's what you did in those days, you played dress-ups, because they were older. I was always the maid. They were the princesses, and they got to go to the ball. I do remember one time that Joyce really upset me, and I was just pummeling her. I was using my fists. But Joyce and I were really closer than Nancy and I. But as we became mature women, but Nancy's husband was such an easygoing man, and he called me this year on my birthday. When you were a little girl, and one time we left Nancy and Bill's, and he always wore a crew cut, and you didn't know that was the name, and you said, I like that man with the stand-up hair. And it was always comfortable at Nancy and Bill's, always comfortable. But I just seemed to be a little closer to Joyce. She's the one that gave me a surprise 16th birthday party. But there were times when I would get so frustrated with Joyce as a mature woman. I wouldn't hear from her. They'd be in Florida, and she would, and I'd call Nancy and say, I'm going to divorce our friend. I had it. And she'd say, that's how she is, Janine. Nancy was very accepting, very easygoing. And so they each brought something to my life. And I miss them both.
Yeah. Now, did you have a nickname growing up?
I got a nickname at camp, and the nickname, it started being Bugs, because I guess I was silly, and then it was changed to Buzz, and all through high school, I was Buzz, all through college. When I was Mayfate Queen in college, the headline said, Buzz Fisher crowned Mayfate Queen, and as you know, my high school class is going to have its 55th reunion this month on the 24th, and when the phone rings and someone says Buzz, I know it's somebody that I've known over 50 years.
So, and why Buzz?
Well, I guess because I was busy, I was in everything, I just wanted to be a part of everything, just wanted to be involved.
Did you know what you wanted to be when you grew up, when you were a kid?
Had no idea. In fact, my father suggested I would probably go into the secretarial area. The thought of going to college, nobody in my family had even graduated from high school. My mother didn't. My father didn't. His brother didn't. So the fact that I was going to even graduate from high school was interesting. And so my father wanted to make sure I took typing in high school and stenography. And then we had to take those aptitude tests. And I was told, well, you'd make a good teacher. Yeah, right. And then when I talked about going to college, it seemed to be a threat to my father. I might get to know more than he did. And so when I left home at 19, I had just finished my first year and I paid my own way through college. And teaching is one of those areas, Lois, you never really know that you love it until you do it. And so I truly enjoyed my years of teaching.
Cool. Now, sometimes when Adam and I are driving really fast and we go around a curve, I'll tell him, hold your hats and don't stand up. And I know that you used to say that to me, but I don't know where that comes from. Where does that come from?
All right. That comes from the Forest Park Highlands, the amusement park in St. Louis, right on Oakland, where now Forest Park Community Junior College stands.
There was an amusement park there?
It was an amusement park. And that office building that has the curved
structure, I know what you're talking about.
It's to emulate the roller coaster. And the roller coaster was called the Comet. And you'd get on the Comet and the pulley would pull you up slower and slower. You'd get to the almost to the tip top and there would be a sign that said, hold your hats and don't stand up, and then you'd go down.
Wow.
So anytime that I think about going on an adventure, I say, and my boys and girls in first grade would ask me, what is that?
Where does that come from? Right, hold your hats and don't stand up. Well, I knew that we said it. Adam would probably be saying it to his kids. Now at least we know where it comes from. It's part of our history. So where's Grandma and Grandpa's family from? Your mom and dad, where are their families from?
Now, I looked at that question and thought, well, I don't really know a lot of history. I know that my Grandma Fisher, her maiden name was Lager, so there was German there. But our name Fisher was spelled the English way rather than F-I-S-C-H-E-R, which is considered the German spelling. My mother's family has been in this country for hundreds of years. Her maiden name was Foote, and the historian Shelby Foote is a distant relative. So I think her family has been in this country since, well, maybe 1637, 1639, that kind of thing. But and my mother was from a strong stock of women, pioneer women, strong women. And in fact, she had said, when I was widowed at such a young age, she said, well, you can be strong. You know, you come from a long line of strong women. I mean, we've been here for 25 generations. How many generations? And I said, oh, a generation's 25 years. Don't give me that. The pilgrims didn't land till 1620. She said, I'm talking 16, it's either 37 or 39. So, yeah, so I closed my mouth. But I think there's English, I think there's Scottish, I think there's maybe some Welsh.
This is on both sides? Grandma and Grandpa.
More on my mother's side. I think there is some German on my dad's side.
What were your grandparents like?
Well, I was afraid of my grandpa. My grandpa, now, you're too young to know, but the president of the miners' union was a man named John L. Lewis. Now, we don't have as many miners as we did when I was growing up. In fact, there's a famous picture where President Roosevelt's wife went down into the mines because her husband had polio. He couldn't go down in the mines. His name was John L. Lewis, and he had these very fierce, curly eyebrows. My Grandpa Fisher had fierce, curly eyebrows. And he was a gruff man. He didn't know how to be real gentle. But my grandma, I was my grandma's girl. And I really liked my grandma. She wore a corset, and she used Evening in Paris perfume. And it was maybe 8-10 years ago, I smelled this smell, and I was immediately a little girl in my grandma's bedroom, and I kept following this smell, and it was Evening in Paris perfume. And so, but then when I became a professional, my grandfather really admired the teaching profession. And so we had a relationship of mutual respect. But growing up, my sister Shirley, she wasn't afraid of Grandpa. She'd tickle him. She'd go up and, no, I would be Grandma's girl. So, but, and I don't know my, didn't get to know my mother's parents at all, because her mother and father were divorced. And think about that. That was very rare. And my grandfather got all four kids. So I don't know all the details of that. And I know that my grandpa Foot would come to visit us sometimes, but he always kind of smelled a little funny. I realize now that it was alcohol that I smelled. I didn't know that then. But he was the kind of... he would be, I guess, inebriated, but he would be that kind of sloppy, lovey. You'd call me his little Janini girl and want to hold me on his lap. And so I did not know him well.
Tell me about your college experience. When did you start?
I started in January 1946 and graduated in June 1950. This was Harris Teachers College. It was before Harris and Stowe joined. At that time, there was still segregation. So you had Stowe was the black teachers' college, and Harris was the white teachers' college. And tuition was all of $25 a semester. And there were times when I had to borrow money for that, because I had an apartment. You know, I lived in a boarding house with a friend and paid for my books and everything, but I loved college. And you had to go for a year, 4.5 years, because you had one semester where you were interning in the schools of St. Louis. Now, in those days, they didn't promise you a job in the city schools, but if you graduated from Harris Teachers College and you passed your state exams, you were very, very qualified to teach school in the St. Louis public schools. And that's what I did when I graduated.
Can you tell me about your first kiss?
I cannot tell you about my first kiss. I don't really remember it. I was thinking, I remember a date with Richard Baker Smith, and we went on the Grand Avenue streetcar down to the Fox Theater. Oh. I remember that.
It was a movie theater then?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I just don't remember my first kiss.
How did you meet my dad?
I was out of college. And I knew your father in high school, because he was a half a year behind me. And he wrote for the school paper. And I was a class officer in my class, so he knew who I was. And I was invited to a wedding, and I didn't have a steady beau, and I was looking good in those days. And I remember wearing a white knit dress and a big black hat, and he was an usher. And by the way, that couple, Ken and Olga Smith, have already sent in their money, and they will be at the reunion on September 24th. But he was an usher, and he said, well, hi, Buzz. I said, hi, Jack. I knew who he was. But he'd had 2 years in Korea, and I'd finished college, and I'd finished my first year teaching. So this was June of 1955, I guess. And he asked if he could take me home, because I came on the bus and streetcar. And another fella had already asked me. Jack told me later, he went over to that guy and said, I am taking her home. And if I have to take you out back and fight with you, I didn't know that till later. And then I left to be a camp counselor in Northern Maine. I had one date with him. And then I went to Northern Maine for 8 weeks. But he did write. And your father was an English major and a journalism minor. And he wrote wonderful letters. And he met my train when I came home from Maine. And that was it. I was his girl. I don't think he thought I was his girl, but I knew I was his girl. Yeah. So I met him at a wedding, but I knew him in high school.
So, and is that how you knew, like, he was the one from his letters, or?
Yes, yes. And he, his sense of humor, he would make literary allusions, and we both knew. He liked the movies. He read. He had a vocabulary. Now, his mother tells me that Korea changed his personality. And my best friend, Faith, who you know, in your mind, might think of as Auntie Faith, Faith tells me that she privately told him, if you hurt her, I'll kill you. So, but I just knew he was the one.
So how did he propose? How did he ask you to marry him?
Oh, it wasn't very romantic at all, I'll tell you. It was February. He was working for, I think, the Illinois Central Railroad as a passenger agent and handled tours. And or maybe he was at McDonnell Douglas, maybe there. No, it was just McDonnell then. But he said, I have to put in for vacation. When do you think we ought to get married? So, and then he never, and so we came up on November 2nd because the teachers' convention was in St. Louis that year. So Thursday and Friday, there was no school. And then the following Monday was what we called then Armistice Day, the 11th of November, and the schools were closed. So I'd have an extra, I'd only be away from my class 3 days. And that was the end of it. I started saving money, and he never said another word about this wedding. And I'm thinking, hey, fella, you know, I've got to buy a dress. I've got to get this. I've got to get that. And in June, school was out, and he came by one night and was giving me a hug, and he twisted my arm and said, hey, what are you doing? And he slipped a ring on my finger. Yes, yes. And but I wish I'd had it for school. I could have showed it off with all the teachers. You know?
So tell me about your wedding day.
Well, that big lazy Susan that I brought to the family gathering at Uncle Red's birthday party, that huge lazy Susan, was a wedding gift. And we were married at 8 o'clock on a Saturday night. And I already had the apartment that we were going to be living in. And this, the doorbell rang, and here stood this little man with this huge package. And I've got on a sweatshirt and old pants. And he said, are you the bride? I said, well, yes. And he gave me this big present, which, of course, I only use for big crowds. But it, I bought my dress downtown. Faith and Joyce were my only two attendants. Shirley couldn't be one of my bridesmaids because she was expecting Sherry in January. And in those days, if you were expecting, you were not a bridesmaid or a bride, I guess. You know? And so went to Salem Church and dressed at the church, and Faith and Joyce dressed at the church. It was a beautiful evening. It was just cool enough that if women had a fur shrug or a fur scarf, they could wear it with a suit that night. And looking at the black and white pictures, because in those days, 1957, you had black and white pictures. The women all had hats on. And then we had a reception downstairs in the church, which was sheet cake, punch, nuts, and mints, and it was over by 10 o'clock. So that's the kind of wedding and reception we had.
So, what was the best thing about teaching?
To really see the light bulb go on in a child's mind when, oh, that these letters made these sounds, and these sounds made these words, and these words together made sense. So that was, there was a part of me that I thought, you know, only I did that. And I've been blessed, Lois. I have some parents who truly to this day, 2005, think their children would not have learned to read if they hadn't had me. And there were other, and that's not realistic, but there are other parents that wouldn't give me the time of day, and that's not realistic either. So it's somewhere in between. But I really loved what I was doing. And
Was there a downside?
Downside is it's an awful lot of work. It's an awful lot of work. Your father was not being sarcastic. You know, I took Mary John. I was already a dedicated teacher. And one night he said, when do you think you'll be through with that? I'm making these big charts. And I said, well, I don't know. He said, well, I was wondering if maybe we could have a conversation. So I brought a lot of work home.
I remember that growing up, too.
Yeah, it's a hard job, and you can't learn in teacher's college how hard it is. But if you want to do a good job, you put a lot of energy into it.
Now, you went to grad school, too. I don't know when you did that or where you went or what prompted it.
All right. Well, when your father died, I got a phone call from one of the teachers in Kirkwood, because I had taught in Kirkwood at Robinson School before you were born. And she said, do you need work? Now, this was the week that your daddy died. We hadn't even buried him yet. And I didn't really know. But see, the school district was smaller then. It was more humane then. And so I had interviews set up. Your daddy was buried on Friday, the 19th of April. And I had an interview on Monday with a principal at DePere School, which is no longer there. And then on, I had a print, and he said, Mrs. Shoemaker, how long have you been a widow? I said, it'll be a week tomorrow. And then I had an interview with Mr. Smith at Kaiser School, who had a first grade opening. And he hired me on the spot to start school in September. And this is April. So I had almost 6 months to grieve, to be ready to teach school. And your grandma Shoemaker was still with us. And she said, well, are you happy, honey? No, I don't really feel anything. I went to that principal as he was retiring, and I said, you really took a chance on me, hiring me so soon after I was tragically widowed. He said, I didn't take any chances, Janine. I asked around.
Oh.
You already had a fine reputation.
Oh.
So
you went to grad school?
Well, and then I was told that my BS degree was not going to be enough. And it was a good second income, but with your daddy gone and we'd only been 10 months in this house and you were 25 months old, I didn't know whether you're going to need orthodontic work or whether you're going to need this or that. And you had that hip dysplasia for a while. And the superintendent didn't ask. He said, you will get your master's degree. And so I began. I taught that first year. I thought the kids need. And then I began that summer of 69 at Webster University. And I had my master's by the time you were ready to go to kindergarten. As I look back, I don't know how I did it, but, you know, I don't know how you got your master's either under those circumstances. It really helped financially
really?
At that time. At that time in the district, when you got your master's, it really paid off financially.
Oh. So that was the incentive.
Yes.
When did you find out that you'd be a parent?
Well, I was teaching at Robinson School, and in those days, the Kirkwood School District insisted that you have a physical exam before your contract was valid. And so I went for my physical, and the doctor said, well, is there anything that you want to talk about? I said, well, I think you ought to know that I'm entering menopause. And he started to laugh, and I said, well, I don't think it's funny. He said, well, Janine, you're too young. I said, well, I don't know what else it could be, because your daddy'd been told by an eminent urologist that he was the most sterile male he'd ever examined. And I said, well, I don't know what else it could be. He said, well, let's do a urine test. And he told me that I was pregnant. I could not believe it. He said, but I, you know, with your history, Janine, I wouldn't tell anybody. Now, this is, I truly said, well, can I tell my husband? He said, well, yes, you can tell your husband. And that night, we just looked at one another. And there was a Playboy Club in St. Louis on Lindell Avenue back in those days. And I think Jack must have had a membership. We went there. And we just could, we'd have a conversation, and then we'd stop and look at one another. We couldn't believe it. And
so you had been trying, I guess? Is that how he had the urologist tell him?
Yes, yes, because we'd been married almost 10 years. And my doctor told me that they'd done everything with me that they could do that didn't cost a great deal of money, and that it was time for Jack to have a test. And he was reluctant. Maybe he suspected. I don't know. He and his sister are almost 10 years apart. Who knows? But and maybe the urologist knew that this hard-headed German needed to be told facts straight out. But in the medical profession, under so many thousand. So we didn't call you Florence Chadwick, Lois, but I said to the doctor, how can that be? And he said, just takes one strong swimmer.
Now, I don't know what the Florence Chadwick allusion
this
is.
This was the first woman to swim the English Channel.
Ah.
Florence Chadwick. See, I had those trivial things, you know.
So tell me about having me, about your labor experience. What was that like? I remember you told me that you had a cigarette in the delivery room, right? They let you smoke then, right?
Oh, yes. But it was the first day of spring, and you weren't due till the next week. And it was a beautiful day. The birds were singing. Daffodils were in bloom. And I went to the bathroom that morning, and I began to sort of drip. And I was not having any kind of labor or contractions or anything like that. But I did need to sit on a towel. And then I began, middle of the afternoon, began having some contractions. And Jack said, I'm calling the doctor. And so we got to the hospital, Deaconess Hospital. There was a parking place. Right in the, I mean, it was just, here it is, the first day of spring, there's a parking place, and I could hear the nurses whispering, they're bringing in an older mother.
How old are you?
I was 33. And so they're bringing in, and in those days, for your first child at 33, you were considered old. I don't remember the pain, Lois. I don't remember, because in those days, and you'd ask me about that, I remember the doctor saying, now, Janine, when you bear down like that, I see a lot of black hair. And then the next thing I know, they put, I guess, oxygen or a mask on my face, breathe deeply. And the next thing I know, you're born.
So you were knocked out, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
So how did you pick my name? How did you pick Lois?
I was thinking about that, and it was your father's name. Because he was Jack and I was Janine, I was going to stay with the J. But my mother's name was Jane. We weren't naming you after my mother. And then I thought about Judy. Well, Jack had dated a girl named Judy before he dated me. We were not giving you that name. And then I thought about Sally, because I taught Scott Forstmann. I taught Dick and Jane and Sally and Puff and Spot and the teddy bear. Teddy bear. What was the teddy bear's name? Well, my first grade class gave me a teddy bear. And he said, we're not naming her Sally. You know, I thought Sally Shoemaker was kind of cute. And finally he said, I think Lois swings. Turns out that the doctor's nurse was named Lois. And she said, well, you can tell your husband she does. So we came up with Lois. Yeah. And then Jean, because my middle name, I mean, to kind of go with right, Janine. Jean. So that's how we came up with Lois. And, of course, I didn't know that years later I would know the history of a woman named Lois who would impact my life. But were named Lois.
What were the hardest moments you had when I was growing up?
Those first 2 years, you had your daddy, and you two had a bond. Let me tell you about that bond. Any baptism I've ever been to, infant baptism, it's either the mother or the godmother that carries the child. Not when you were baptized. Your father carried you. I mean, I guess if you've been told that you're never going to have children, and then you have this child. And so you had a bond, the two of you. And but then when I was, and I knew at night, if I didn't hear you, he would. And of course, you were breastfed, and he would go and get you sometimes and bring you into bed for me to feed you. So that was listening at night. It was fear. It was fear. What if I do something wrong? Also trying to be both mother and father, to be superwoman, to prove to the world that the circumstances of your father's death were not my fault. Nobody asked me that. Nobody told me that. I just felt that. So it was a scary time. And I know I screamed a lot and I yelled a lot, but I think it was fear-based. I wanted you to be perfect so I'd be perfect.
You send cards to everyone. Did you always do that?
I think I started doing that with my first graders, sending them postcards, you know, way to go. You did a great job this week. And then the birthday cards just followed. And then your Aunt Shirley told me that Hallmark had a program where you would get reimbursed. Sometimes you'd get checks in the mail that would help you buy more cards. So, and I like to find just the right card sometimes. And so I enjoy doing that. And I had a man tell me that I didn't see it as a service. I didn't see it, but he saw it as a service that I remember birthdays and anniversaries and things. And your dear friend Barbie told me last year that Ashley was so looking forward to birthday and all the cards she would get. And I was the only one that sent her a card because her grandma died.
Yeah.
And her aunts and uncles, I guess, just like your aunts and uncles, didn't send you cards.
Yeah. So who is important in your life today? What are your joys now?
Oh, I'm sitting next to one of my joys, my grandson. You are a joy, the fact that we have this relationship. Do you remember the Mother's Day card you gave me last year? It said, the greatest compliment you can receive is when someone tells you that you remind them of me. At the Fall Classic this weekend, someone said, this is Lois's mother. And so it's the relationship between the joy that we have now, and I'm really learning to love the man that you're engaged to, and so there are many joys.
Well, you have lots of friends, right?
Lots of friends. I also have a relationship with my mother now that I didn't have growing up, and I do have now. And we can tell one another we love one another and mean it.
How would you like to be remembered? Like, if people were just saying, oh, Janine, you know, how would you want to be remembered? What is...
As a vibrant woman, as an energetic woman, as a woman who was open to new ideas, as a woman who could always tell a joke and make people laugh.
That's true.
A woman that people felt comfortable with, willing to explore new ideas, just good company. Good company.
Well, I think you are that. You know, I do. I mean, I think there's so much, like, that you've done for me, I guess, that I am who I am only as a result of you, right? Well, and sometimes in reaction to you, you know, and sometimes as a result. But I'm glad you remembered that card, because it is a high compliment.
It is.
When people tell me that I'm like you.
And you also told me one time you'd gone to a party, and you said, Mama, words to the effect that they did the best they could, but they didn't decorate and do it the way you do it. And I do give a party.
Well, you sure do decorate. We're going to get like boxes and boxes of things, we think, someday. All these holiday decorations all labeled and marked. I think that's about all I have. Thanks, Mom.
Oh, thank you, Lois. What a treasure. Thank you.
I'm Lois Carr. I'm 39. Today is September 8th, 2005. We are in front of the St. Louis History Museum, and I am the daughter.
My name is Janine Shoemaker. I am 73 years old as of last Sunday, the 4th of September. Today's date is the 8th of September. And I am inside of an Airstream parked in front of the History Museum at St. Louis, Missouri. And I am the mother of the interviewer.
So, Mom, tell me what your earliest memory is.
Well, I was thinking about that. And I don't have any really early, you know, before five. I don't remember kindergarten. I remember the name of the kindergarten teacher, Miss Hall. But I remember a birthday party when I was 9 years old, my very first birthday party with friends. And they came for lunch, and Mom had fixed a grab bag in the center of the table with ribbons streaming out, and you pulled your ribbon and you got what was on the end of it. So that's really my earliest memory, is when I was 79. That was a happy memory.
Cool. How would you describe yourself as a child? Were you happy?
I don't know whether I was happy. I did a lot of escaping in books. Mom and Dad fought a lot, and that was scary. And so I escaped in books. But I did have friends on both sides of me. Nancy lived on one side and Joyce lived on the other. And as you know, those two friends are no longer with us.
So now, what was it like with all those people living in the house? I've seen Grandma's house. I know it's really small.
It's very small.
Okay, so how many people were there?
Well, at the time that I was growing up, when we moved in the house in 1935, March of 1935, I was 5 years old, almost. And, anyway, it was 1935, and I guess I was 2 and a half, excuse me, and Shirley was just a baby because she was born in January 1935. So for 5 years, it was just the four of us. The only problem is that architect, you had to go through Mom and Dad's bedroom to get to the only bathroom in the house. And then when Shirley was 5 years old, Alan was born. And I was 8 when he was born. And then the next baby, I was 13, and she was in the crib. And then I was 15 for the next one. And but they were still like babies, you know. Right, they were in the crib and things like that. And then I was 17 when Linda was born. But I left home at 19, so I was not living at home when Barry was born. And he was born 3 days after my 20th birthday. He was born the 7th of September.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yes. So it didn't seem, you know, really crowded, except we just had the one closet. And so the girls all hung our clothes in, and we had a dresser with about 5 or 6 drawers. Each person got one drawer. And that's where you kept your underwear and your sweaters and everything. You got one drawer.
Did you have a favorite sibling then?
I did not feel like a sibling to Shirley. I felt like she was like my living doll to play with. And, and Mother tells me, I don't remember this, but she tells me that Shirley didn't get in trouble because I remembered the things that I got in trouble for and protected her. I would say no to her before she could get in trouble. I did feel like a sister to my brother, Alan. Yes, I really did. For all the rest, I was sort of like surrogate mother. You think right. about that, 13, 15, 17. And so, and I did a lot of babysitting and taking care of that kind of thing.
Do you have a favorite sibling now, would you say? Are you closest to one of your sisters?
Or? It's an absolute blessing that I've developed a relationship with all my sisters. You think about it, Linda was 2 years old when I left home. Those little girls were 2, 4, and 6. And now that we're married women, we're grandmothers, we're mothers, we're grandmothers, I really connect with my little sister, Linda, my sister, Shirley, who I would fight with. We don't hang up the phone without saying, I love you. So my sister, Norma, I like for one reason. My sister, Julie, is getting much more conservative as she gets older. So there are certain subjects that I do not bring up with her.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I have friends like that.
Yeah.
We just don't talk about that
mm-hmm.
stuff. Did you get into trouble when you were growing up? What was the worst thing you ever did?
I don't know what the worst thing. I do remember my father had a razor strap, and I do remember I must have been bad enough that I got spanked by with the razor strap. But my sister Shirley would start to cry before she ever, you know, before he said over my knee. And so she didn't get much of a spanking. I was one of those stubborn, he's not going to see me cry. He can't make me cry. And then, of course, I got a worse spanking. So I must have done something to deserve that.
You don't remember what you did, huh? No. You just remember the getting spanked, huh? Now you mentioned your best friends,
mm-hmm.
so they, and what were they like? Were they, you know, were they the same? Were they different? Did you like one for one reason?
Yes. Nancy was so even going. And as we grew up together, you remember my memory, I was 2 and a half. Nancy is exactly 2 years older and 1 week in September. And Joyce was 1.5 years older. And when we'd play dress ups, and, of course, that's what you did in those days. You played dress-ups because they were older. I was always the maid. They were the princesses, and they got to go to the ball. I do remember one time that Joyce really upset me, and I was just pummeling her. I was using my fist. You know? But Joyce and I were really closer than Nancy and I. But as we became mature women, but Nancy's husband was such an easygoing man, and he called me this year on my birthday when you were a little girl, and one time we left Nancy and Bill's, and he always wore a crew cut, and you didn't know that was the name, and you said, I like that man with the stand-up hair. And it was always comfortable at Nancy and Bill's, always comfortable. But I just seemed to be a little closer to Joyce. She's the one that gave me a surprise 16th birthday party. But there were times when I would get so frustrated with Joyce as a mature woman, I wouldn't hear from her. They'd be in Florida, and she would, and I'd call Nancy and say, I'm going to divorce our friend. I had it. And she'd say, that's how she is, Janine. Nancy was very accepting, very easygoing. And so they each brought something to my life. And I miss them both.
Yeah. Now, did you have a nickname growing up?
I got a nickname at camp. And the nickname, it started being Bugs. Because I guess I was silly. And then it was changed to Buzz. And all through high school, I was Buzz. All through college. When I was May Fate Queen in college, the headline said, Buzz Fisher crowned May Fate Queen. And as you know, my high school class is going to have its 55th reunion this month on the 24th. And when the phone rings and someone says Buzz, I know it's somebody that I've known over 50 years.
So, and why Buzz?
Well, I guess because I was busy. I was in everything. I just wanted to be a part of everything. Just wanted to be involved.
Did you know what you wanted to be when you grew up, when you were a kid?
Had no idea. In fact, my father suggested I would probably go into the secretarial area. The thought of going to college, nobody in my family had even graduated from high school. My mother didn't. My father didn't. His brother didn't. So the fact that I was going to even graduate from high school was interesting. And so my father wanted to make sure I took typing in high school and stenography. And then we had to take those aptitude tests. And I was told, well, you'd make a good teacher. Yeah, right. And then when I talked about going to college, it seemed to be a threat to my father. I might get to know more than he did. And so when I left home at 19, I had just finished my first year and I paid my own way through college. And teaching is one of those areas, Lois, you never really know that you love it until you do it. And so I truly enjoyed my years of teaching.
Cool. Now, sometimes when Adam and I are driving really fast and we go around a curve, I'll tell him, hold your hats and don't stand up. And I know that you used to say that to me, but I don't know where that comes from. Where does that come from?
All right, that comes from the Forest Park Highlands, the amusement park in St. Louis, right on Oakland, where now Forest Park Community Junior College stands.
There was an amusement park there?
It was an amusement park. And that office building that has the curved
structure,
I know
what you're talking about.
It's to emulate the roller coaster, and the roller coaster was called the Comet, and you'd get on the Comet, and the pulley would pull you up slower and slower. You'd get to the almost to the tip top, and there would be a sign that said, "Hold your hats and don't stand up," and then you'd go down.
Wow!
So anytime that I think about going on an adventure, I say, and my boys and girls in first grade would ask me, what is that?
Where does that come from? Right. Hold your hands and don't stand up. Well, I knew that we said it. Adam would probably be saying it to his kids. Now at least we know where it comes from. It's part of our history. So where's Grandma and Grandpa's family from? Your mom and dad, where are their families from?
Now, I looked at that question and thought, well, I don't really know a lot of history. I know that my Grandma Fisher, her maiden name was Lager, so there was German there. But our name Fisher was spelled the English way rather than F-I-S-C-H-E-R, which is considered the German spelling. My mother's family has been in this country for hundreds of years. Her maiden name was Foote, and the historian Shelby Foote is a distant relative. So I think her family has been in this country since, well, maybe 1637, 1639, that kind of thing. But and my mother was from a strong stock of women, pioneer women, strong women. And in fact, she had said, when I was widowed at such a young age, she said, well, you can be strong. You know, you come from a long line of strong women. I mean, we've been here for 25 generations. How many generations? And I said, oh, a generation's 25 years. Don't give me that. The Pilgrims didn't land till 1620. She said, I'm talking 16, it's either 37 or 39. So, yeah, so I closed my mouth. But I think there's English, I think there's Scottish, I think there's maybe some Welsh.
This is on both sides, Grandma and Grandpa?
More on my mother's side. I think there is some German on my dad's side.
What were your grandparents like?
Well, I was afraid of my grandpa. My grandpa, now, you're too young to know, but the president of the miners' union was a man named John L. Lewis. Now, we don't have as many miners as we did when I was growing up. In fact, there's a famous picture where President Roosevelt's wife went down into the mines because her husband had polio. He couldn't go down in the mines. His name was John L. Lewis, and he had these very fierce, curly eyebrows. My grandpa Fisher had fierce, curly eyebrows. And he was a gruff man. He didn't know how to be real gentle. But my grandma, I was my grandma's girl. And I really liked my grandma. She wore a corset. And she used Evening in Paris perfume. And it was maybe 8-10 years ago, I smelled this smell. And I was immediately a little girl in my grandma's bedroom. And I kept following the smell. And it was Evening in Paris perfume. And so, but then when I became a professional, my grandfather really admired the teaching profession. And so we had a relationship of mutual respect. But growing up, my sister Shirley, she wasn't afraid of Grandpa. She'd tickle him. She'd go up and, I would be Grandma's girl. So, but, I don't know, didn't get to know my mother's parents at all because her mother and father were divorced. And think about that. That was very rare. And my grandfather got all four kids. So I don't know all the details of that. And I know that my grandpa Foot would come to visit us sometimes, but he always kind of smelled a little funny. I realize now that it was alcohol that I smelled. I didn't know that then. But he was the kind of, he would be, I guess, inebriated, but he would be that kind of sloppy, lovey. You'd call me his little Janini girl and want to hold me on his lap. And so I did not know him well.
Tell me about your college experience. When did you start?
I started in January 1946 and graduated in June 1950. This was Harris Teachers College. It was before Harris and Stowe joined. At that time, there was still segregation. So you had Stowe was the black teachers' college, and Harris was the white teachers' college. And tuition was all of $25 a semester, and there were times when I had to borrow money for that because I had an apartment. You know, I lived in a boarding house with a friend and paid for my books and everything, but I loved college. And you had to go for a year, 4.5 years, because you had one semester where you were interning in the schools of St. Louis. Now, in those days, they didn't promise you a job in the city schools. But if you graduated from Harris Teachers College and you passed your state exams, you were very, very qualified to teach school in the St. Louis public schools. And that's what I did when I graduated.
Can you tell me about your first kiss?
I cannot tell you about my first kiss. I don't really remember it. I was thinking, I remember a date with Richard Baker Smith, and we went on the Grand Avenue streetcar down to the Fox Theater. Oh. I remember that.
It was a movie theater then?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I just don't remember my first kiss.
How did you meet my dad?
I was out of college, and I knew your father in high school because he was a half a year behind me, and he wrote for the school paper, and I was a class officer in my class, so he knew who I was, and I was invited to a wedding, and I didn't have a steady beau, and I was looking good in those days, and I remember wearing a white knit dress and a big black hat, and he was an usher. And by the way, that couple, Ken and Olga Smith, have already sent in their money, and they will be at the reunion on September 24th. But he was an usher, and he said, well, hi, Buzz. I said, hi, Jack. I knew who he was. But he'd had 2 years in Korea, and I'd finished college, and I'd finished my first year teaching. So this was June of 1955, I guess. And he asked if he could take me home because I came on the bus and streetcar. And another fella had already asked me. Jack told me later he went over to that guy and said, I am taking her home. And if I have to take you out back and fight with you. I didn't know that till later. And then I left to be a camp counselor in Northern Maine. I had one date with him, and then I went to Northern Maine for 8 weeks. But he did write, and your father was an English major and a journalism minor, and he wrote wonderful letters. And he met my train when I came home from Maine, and that was it. I was his girl. I don't think he thought I was his girl, but I knew I was his girl. Yeah. So I met him at a wedding, but I knew him in high school.
So, and is that how you knew, like, he was the one from his letters, or?
Yes, yes. And he, his sense of humor, he would make literary allusions, and we both knew. He liked the movies. He read. He had a vocabulary. Now, his mother tells me that Korea changed his personality. And my best friend, Faith, who you know, in your mind might think of as Auntie Faith, Faith tells me that she privately told him, if you hurt her, I'll kill you. So, but I just knew he was the one.
So how did he propose? How did he ask you to marry him?
Oh, it wasn't very romantic at all, I'll tell you. It was February. He was working for, I think, the Illinois Central Railroad as a passenger agent and handled tours. And or maybe he was at McDonnell Douglas, maybe there. No, it was just McDonnell then. But he said, I have to put in for vacation. When do you think we ought to get married? So, and then he never, and so we came up on November 2nd because the teachers' convention was in St. Louis that year. So Thursday and Friday, there was no school. And then the following Monday was what we called then Armistice Day, the 11th of November, and the schools were closed. So I'd have an extra, I'd only be away from my class 3 days. And that was the end of it. I started saving money, and he never said another word about this wedding. And I'm thinking, hey, fella, you know, I've got to buy a dress. I've got to get this. I've got to get that. And in June, school was out, and he came by one night and was giving me a hug, and he twisted my arm and said, hey, what are you doing? And he slipped a ring on my finger. Yes, yes. But I wish I'd had it for school. I could have showed it off with all the teachers. You know?
So tell me about your wedding day.
Well, that big lazy Susan that I brought to the family gathering at Uncle Red's birthday party, that huge lazy Susan, was a wedding gift, and we were married at 8 o'clock on a Saturday night, and I already had the apartment that we were going to be living in. And this, the doorbell rang, and here stood this little man with this huge package, and I've got on a sweatshirt and old pants, and he said, "Are you the bride?" I said, "Well, yes," and he gave me this big present, which, of course, I only use for big crowds. But I bought my dress downtown. Faith and Joyce were my only two attendants. Shirley couldn't be one of my bridesmaids because she was expecting Sherry in January. And in those days, if you were expecting, you were not a bridesmaid. Or a bride, I guess, you know. And went to Salem Church and dressed at the church, and Faith and Joyce dressed at the church. It was a beautiful evening. It was just cool enough that if women had a fur shrug or a fur scarf, they could wear it with a suit that night. And looking at the black and white pictures, because in those days, 1957, you had black and white pictures. The women all had hats on. And then we had a reception downstairs in the church, which was sheet cake, punch, nuts, and mints. And it was over by 10 o'clock. So that's the kind of wedding and reception we had.
So, what was the best thing about teaching?
To really see the light bulb go on in a child's mind when, oh, that these letters made these sounds, and these sounds made these words, and these words together made sense. So that was, there was a part of me that I thought, you know, only I did that. And I've been blessed, Lois. I have some parents who truly to this day, 2005, think their children would not have learned to read if they hadn't had me. And there were other, and that's not realistic, but there are other parents that wouldn't give me the time of day, and that's not realistic either. So it's somewhere in between. But I really loved what I was doing. And
Was there a downside?
Downside is it's an awful lot of work. It's an awful lot of work. Your father was not being sarcastic. You know, I took Mary John. I was already a dedicated teacher. And one night he said, "When do you think you'll be through with that? I'm making these big charts." And I said, "Well, I don't know." He said, "Well, I was wondering if maybe we could have a conversation." So I brought a lot of work home.
I remember that growing up, too.
Yeah, it's a hard job, and you can't learn in teacher's college how hard it is. But if you want to do a good job, you put a lot of energy into it.
And you went to grad school, too. I don't know when you did that or where you went or what prompted it.
All right. Well, when your father died, I got a phone call from one of the teachers in Kirkwood, because I had taught in Kirkwood at Robinson School before you were born. And she said, "Do you need work?" Now, this was the week that your daddy died. We hadn't even buried him yet. And I didn't really know. But see, the school district was smaller then. It was more humane then. And so I had interviews set up. Your daddy was buried on Friday, the 19th of April. And I had an interview on Monday with a principal at DePere School, which is no longer there. And then and he said, "Mrs. Shoemaker, how long have you been a widow?" I said, "It'll be a week tomorrow." And then I had an interview with Mr. Smith at Kaiser School, who had a first grade opening. And he hired me on the spot to start school in September. And this is April. So I had almost 6 months to to grieve, to be ready to teach school. And your grandma Shoemaker was still with us. And she said, well, are you happy, honey? I said, no, I don't really feel anything. I went to that principal as he was retiring, and I said, you really took a chance on me, hiring me so soon after I was tragically widowed. He said, I didn't take any chances, Janine. I asked around.
Oh.
You already had a fine reputation.
Oh.
So
you went to grad school?
Well, and then I was told that my BS degree was not going to be enough. And it was a good second income, but with your daddy gone and we'd only been 10 months in this house and you were 25 months old, I didn't know whether you're going to need orthodontic work or whether you're going to need this or that. And you had that hip dysplasia for a while. And the superintendent didn't ask. He said, you will get your master's degree. And so I taught that first year. I thought the kids need. And then I began that summer of 69 at Webster University. And I had my master's by the time you were ready to go to kindergarten. As I look back, I don't know how I did it, but, you know, I don't know how you got your master's either under those circumstances. It really helped financially
really?
At that time. At that time in the district, when you got your master's, it really paid off financially.
Oh. So that was the incentive?
Yes, yes, yes.
When did you find out that you'd be a parent?
Well, I was teaching at Robinson School, and in those days, the Kirkwood School District insisted that you have a physical exam before your contract was valid. And so I went for my physical, and the doctor said, well, is there anything that you want to talk about? I said, well, I think you ought to know that I'm entering menopause. And he started to laugh, and I said, well, I don't think it's funny. He said, well, Janine, you're too young. I said, well, I don't know what else it could be because your daddy'd been told by an eminent urologist that he was the most sterile male he'd ever examined. And I said, well, I don't know what else it could be. He said, well, let's do a urine test. And he told me that I was pregnant. I could not believe it. He said, but you know, with your history, Janine, I wouldn't tell anybody. Now, I truly said, well, can I tell my husband? He said, well, yes, you can tell your husband. And that night, we just looked at one another. And there was a Playboy Club in St. Louis on Lindell Avenue back in those days. And I think Jack must have had a membership. We went there. And we'd have a conversation, and then we'd stop and look at one another. We couldn't believe it. And
so you had been trying, I guess? Is that how he had the urologist tell him?
Yes, yes, because we'd been married almost 10 years. And my doctor told me that they'd done everything with me that they could do that didn't cost a great deal of money and that it was time for Jack to have a test. And he was reluctant. Maybe he suspected. I don't know. He and his sister are almost 10 years apart. Who knows? But and maybe the urologist knew that this hard-headed German needed to be told facts straight out. But in the medical profession, under so many thousand. So we didn't call you Florence Chadwick, Lois, but I said to the doctor, how can that be? And he said, just takes one strong swimmer.
Now, I don't know what the Florence Chadwick allusion
this
is.
This was the first woman to swim the English Channel.
Ah.
Florence Chadwick. See, I had those trivial things, you know.
So tell me about having me, about your labor experience. What was that like? I remember you told me that you had a cigarette in the delivery room, right? They let you smoke then, right?
Oh, yes. But it was the first day of spring, and you weren't due till the next week. And it was beautiful day. The birds were singing. Daffodils were in bloom. And I went to the bathroom that morning, and I began to sort of drip drip. And I was not having any kind of labor contractions or anything like that. But I did need to sit on a towel. And then I began, middle of the afternoon, began having some contractions. And Jack said, I'm calling the doctor. And so we got to the hospital, Deaconess Hospital. There was a parking place right in the, I mean, it was just, here it is, the first day of spring, there's a parking place. And I could hear the nurses whispering, they're bringing in an older mother.
How old are you?
I was 33. And so they're bringing in, and in those days, for your first child at 33, you were considered old. I don't remember the pain, Lois. I don't remember, because in those days, and you'd ask me about that, I remember the doctor saying, now, Janine, when you bear down like that, I see a lot of black hair. And then the next thing I know, they put, I guess, oxygen or a mask on my face, breathe deeply, and the next thing I know, you're born.
So you were knocked out, actually.
Mm-hmm. Oh. Mm-hmm.
So how did you pick my name? How did you pick Lois?
I was thinking about that, and it was your father's name. Because he was Jack and I was Janine, I was going to stay with the J. But my mother's name was Jane. We weren't naming you after my mother. And then I thought about Judy. Well, Jack had dated a girl named Judy before he dated me. We were not giving you that name. And then I thought about Sally, because I taught Scott Forstmann. I taught Dick and Jane and Sally and Puff and Spot and the teddy bear. Teddy bear. What was the teddy bear's name? Well, my first grade class gave me a teddy bear. And he said, we're not naming her Sally. You know, I thought Sally Shoemaker was kind of cute. And finally he said, I think Lois Swings. Turns out that the doctor's nurse was named Lois, and she said, well, you can tell your husband she does. So we came up with Lois. Yeah, and then Jean, because my middle name, I mean, to kind of go with
right,
Janine. So that's how we came up with Lois. And, of course, I didn't know that years later I would know the history of a woman named Lois who would impact my life. But you were named Lois.
What were the hardest moments you had when I was growing up?
Those first 2 years, you had your daddy, and you two had a bond. Let me tell you about that bond. Any baptism I've ever been to, infant baptism, it's either the mother or the godmother that carries the child. Not when you were baptized. Your father carried you. I mean, I guess if you've been told that you're never going to have children, and then you have this child. And so you had a bond, the two of you. And but then when I was, and I knew at night, if I didn't hear you, he would. And of course, you were breastfed, and he would go and get you sometimes and bring you into bed for me to feed you. So that was listening at night. It was fear. It was fear. What if I do something wrong? Also trying to be both mother and father, to be superwoman, to prove to the world that the circumstances of your father's death were not my fault. Nobody asked me that. Nobody told me that. I just felt that. So it was a scary time. And I know I screamed a lot and I yelled a lot, but I think it was fear-based. I wanted you to be perfect so I'd be perfect.
You send cards to everyone. Did you always do that?
I think I started doing that with my first graders, sending them postcards, you know, way to go. You did a great job this week. And then the birthday cards just followed. And then your Aunt Shirley told me that Hallmark had a program where you would get reimbursed. Sometimes you'd get checks in the mail that would help you buy more cards. So, and I like to find just the right card sometimes. And so I enjoy doing that. And I had a man tell me that I did I didn't see it as a service. I didn't see it, but he saw it as a service that I remember birthdays and anniversaries and things. And your dear friend Barbie told me last year that Ashley was so looking forward to birthday and all the cards she would get. And I was the only one that sent her a card because her grandma had died.
Yeah.
And her aunts and uncles, I guess, just like your aunts and uncles, didn't send you cards.
Yeah. So who is important in your life today? What are your joys now?
Oh, I'm sitting next to one of my joys, my grandson. You are a joy, the fact that we have this relationship. Do you remember the Mother's Day card you gave me last year? It said, the greatest compliment you can receive is when someone tells you that you remind them of me. At the Fall Classic this weekend, someone said, this is Lois's mother. And so it's the relationship between the joy that we have now. And I'm really learning to love the man that you're engaged to. So there are many joys.
Well, and you have lots of friends, right?
Lots of friends. I also have a relationship with my mother now that I didn't have growing up, and I do have now. And we can tell one another we love one another and mean it. And mean it.
How would you like to be remembered? Like if people were just saying, oh, Janine, you know, how would you want to be remembered? What is...
As a vibrant woman, as an energetic woman, as a woman who was open to new ideas, as a woman who could always tell a joke and make people laugh.
That's true.
A woman that people felt comfortable with, willing to explore new ideas, just good company. Just good company.
Well, I think you are that. You know, I do. I mean, I think there's so much, like, that you've done for me, I guess, that I am who I am only as a result of you, right? Well, and sometimes in reaction to you, you know, and sometimes as a result. But I'm glad you remembered that card because it is a high compliment.
It is.
When people tell me I'm like you.
And you also told me one time you'd gone to a party and you said, Mama, words to the effect that they did the best they could, but they didn't decorate and do it the way you do it. And I do give a party.
Well, you sure do decorate. We're going to get like boxes and boxes of things we think someday. All these holiday decorations all labeled and marked. I think that's about all I have. Thanks, Mom.
Oh, thank you, Lois. What a treasure. Thank you.